News of the Times. Frightful Fridays. The Dark Side of Royalty in the 1700s. Welcome to News of the Times. In today's episode, we look at two cases of naughty nobles in the 18th century. Our first case from 1729 involves Lord and Lady Abergavenny and a good friend, their neighbour to their Sussex estate, Mr. Liddell. Mr. Liddell is a frequent visitor. Servants are aware of the intimate relationship between her ladyship and Mr. Liddell, but it is not until she is caught in the act that his lordship becomes involved. Our second story from 1768 tells the infamous case of Lord Baltimore and a young woman he has taken a liking to. Sounding very much like an 18th century version of Jeffrey Epstein. The story recounts the deception, the incarceration, and the repeated assaults on Sarah Woodcock, who had the misfortune of being spotted by one of Lord Baltimore's team of procurers of fresh young women. Two cases of 18th century nobles behaving very badly is today's episode of Frightful Fridays. We hope you enjoy the show. Case 1. Lady Abergavenny. It is 1729 in the country estate in Sussex of Lord and Lady Abergavenny. Elizabeth Hopping, one of the many housemaids working there, is going about her daily chores at 9 o'clock in the morning. She has been up for hours, and as she approaches one of the closed heavy oak doors, she hears a repeated thudding sound from within. Wishing to help, but also to keep herself safe, she bends down to look through the keyhole. What she sees makes her gasp. She quickly covers her mouth to keep silent, and she looks again. There, against a closed door within the room, she sees Lady Abergavenny with her skirts bunched up above her garters. Pressed against her, with hands in places covered by her good lady's voluminous material, is Lord Abergavenny's best friend, Mr. Liddell. The two are embracing passionately with a repeated thud against the door by Lady Abergavenny. Mr. Liddell's coat is unbuttoned. The maid, Elizabeth Hopping, backs away. Uncertain what to do, she escapes down to her friend, the laundry maid, and shares with her the secret she has seen. The servants gossip. Mr. Richard Liddell, described as a modest, well-bred gentleman, is a close neighbour to Lord and Lady Abergavenny, with his property a mere 7 miles away. Mr. Liddell, as a close friend of the family, often would come to stay at the manor house for a week at a time. The servants noticed how Lady Abergavenny would always inform the servants to ensure that any unsuspected visitors to the manor during Mr. Liddell's stay were to be told that Lady Abergavenny was out. As the intimacy between Lady Abergavenny and Mr. Liddell intensifies, the two are spotted by a laundry maid kissing by the window upstairs, and another housemaid notes that the bed is unmade after Mr. Liddell has visited the lady's bedchamber. Mr. Matthews. It is October 1729, and Lord Abergavenny's secretary, Mr. Matthews, is working in the study. His role is to oversee the family estate, and he is having increasing concerns regarding the state of finances. Poring over lease agreements in the study, he hears a bed creaking above in the white room, the bedroom of the visiting Mr. Liddell. He waits, but hears the noise again. Getting up, he goes to the main staircase, where he sees Mr. Liddell calling for his servant. Matthews finds a servant and asks him to send up Mr. Liddell's valet. He then rushes to the back stairs and accompanying back entrance to Mr. Liddell's room and sees a very dishevelled Lady Abergavenny emerge from the white room. The next day, once again, he hears the sound of beds creaking above the study in the white room, which is Mr. Liddell's room. Mr. Matthews, once again, rushes up to the back stairs to the back entrance of the white room and lies in wait, hidden. Sometime later, he hears the bolt withdrawn and sees Mr. Liddell opening the door and furtively peering out. Lady Abergavenny is seen smoothing out her silks again, looking dishevelled, and leaves his room. 2 days later, the same noises are emitted from Mr. Liddell's room, the white room. Mr. Matthews decides he needs verification from other staff members and shares the secret and his suspicions with the house steward, Mr. Osman. Once again, Mr. Matthews, this time with Mr. Osman by his side, wait, hidden, facing Mr. Liddell's door. Again, the same actions take place with Lady Abergavenny flushed and in a state of disorder, leaving Mr. Liddell's room. Now certain that they can prove their suspicions against Lady Abergavenny, the two decide to inform his lordship. They first approach his mother, but she is too upset to help break the information to her son. They approach a relation and neighbour, Mr. Day, with the evidence they have collected. He agrees to share the news with his lordship, Lord Abergavenny. Approached with the terrible news of his wife's adultery, Lord Abergavenny initially does not believe it. With effort, he agrees to an attempt to catch his wife in the act. Given his position, he himself cannot be involved. He leaves it to the three conspirators, Mr. Matthews, Mr. Osman, and his relation and neighbour, Mr. Day, to catch the two in the act. On the 7th of November, Mr. Matthews, Mr. Osman, and Mr. Day gather together in the small closet adjoining the white room, the room used by Mr. Liddell, watched through a keyhole. Mr. Osman sees Lady Abergavenny enter the room and whisper to Mr. Liddell. The three men wait a few more minutes, then quietly creep out of the closet, approaching the bed in which Mr. Liddell sleeps. Quickly throwing aside the closed bed curtains, they see Mr. Liddell there wearing only a shirt. Beside him, lying on her back, her naked legs akimbo in a very indecent position, is Lady Abergavenny. Even more shocking is that she's heavily pregnant. Seeing the three men, she cries out, "Matthew, do not ruin me," as she tries to cover herself up. Mr. Matthews explains that he has been sent to spy on them at the instruction of her husband. As for Mr. Liddell, he says, "Sir, I thought you would not have been guilty of such a vile act. It is a crime for which you can make no satisfaction." Mr. Liddell begs to have the privilege of riding away, never to return, but he is not given that option, and instead is locked in his room. Lady Abergavenny later sends a servant to check on him, but he sends the servant away, wishing not to be spoken to again. Mr. Matthews, in all haste, rides to London to the family solicitor to begin proceedings against Mr. Liddell. At 3 o'clock that same afternoon, Lady Abergavenny is sent away to her father's house in London. Shortly after giving birth, 1 month later, Lady Abergavenny is dead. Women died after childbirth all the time, but this death is not investigated. Even if there were questions regarding her death, it would not have been investigated, given the absolute scandal of her affair at the time and the birth of a suspected illegitimate child. With his wife banished, Lord Abergavenny pursued both his wife, Lady Abergavenny, and Mr. Liddell for damages. From the Derby Mercury, the 29th of May, 1729, on Tuesday in the afternoon, a remarkable trial came on before the Lord Chief Justice Eyre in the Court of Common Pleas at Westminster. between the Right Honourable William Lord Abergavenny, the first Baron of England, plaintiff, and the Right Honourable Lady Dowager Abergavenny, defendant, in an action of Scan Mag, which went for the plaintiff, and a verdict was given to him for £2,000. In February 1730, the case came to trial against Mr. Liddell. Lord Abergavenny claimed the utter outrageous compensation sum of £50,000, worth over £15 million in 2024. He is in fact awarded £10,000, worth over £3 million in 2024. From the Kentish Weekly Post or Canterbury Journal, the 21st of February 1730, yesterday came on a trial between Lord Abergavenny and Mr. Liddell, a Suffolk gentleman, before the Lord Chief Justice Ayrer in the Court of Common Pleas, upon an action for £50,000 against the latter for a criminal conversation with the Lady Abergavenny. Several noble lords and gentlemen appear on behalf of Mr. Liddell's character, and after a full hearing which lasts from 9 o'clock till 3 in the afternoon, the jury went out and after half an hour stay gave a verdict for the plaintiff with £10,000 damages. Gasping under the enormous sum he is charged to pay to Lord Abergavenny, which is designed to bankrupt him utterly, Mr. Liddell legally requests the sum of damages to be reviewed and reduced. His request is denied. From the Newcastle Courant, the 2nd of May, 1730, on Tuesday, Mr. Liddell moved the Court of Common Pleas for a new trial at the suit of Lord Abergavenny on account of excessive damages. But the fame was not granted. Mr. Liddell was ruined. The retelling of the scandal raged on for years to come. As for Lord Abergavenny, whether as a prize for the public humiliation he underwent, or possibly from a wicked sense of humour, Lord Abergavenny is honoured with the privilege of an invitation to become Lord of the Bedchamber to His Majesty George II. From the salacious scandal and mysterious death of the Lady Abergavenny, we move to the terrible tale of Frederick, Lord Baltimore, and Sarah Woodcock. Background. Lord Baltimore's long distinguished family dated back to the time of King James I. His family were awarded a large tract of land in America, which became known as Maryland. At the appropriate age, he married a woman of distinction. Their marriage was an exceedingly unhappy one. Lord Baltimore, inspired by his travels abroad and by the culture of the Turks, whom he admired greatly, rebuilds part of his family estate into a harem, where he keeps women on hand. Additionally, he has a number of associates who help him to procure fresh new girls. They are a native German, Dr. Griffenberg, his wife, Elizabeth Griffenberg, and Anne Harvey, a woman of low birth. It is these associates who spy young, naive Sarah Woodcock, who runs a milliner's shop on Tower Hill in London. From the Newgate Calendar on the 26th of March, 1768, Frederick Lord Baltimore, Elizabeth Griffenberg, and Anne Harvey, the former tried for committing a rape on Sarah Woodcock, and the two latter as accessories before the fact, on the 26th of March, 1768. In November 1767, Mrs. Harvey told his lordship that a young lady named Woodcock, who was very handsome, kept a milliner's shop on Tower Hill. Prompted by curiosity and a still more ignoble motive, Lord Baltimore went once or twice to the shop and purchased some trifling article by way of making an acquaintance. He then asked her if she would attend him to a play, but this she declined. Mrs. Harvey, going to Miss Woodcock's shop on the 14th of December, bespoke a pair of laced ruffles, which she desired might be made up against for the next day for the use of a lady who might be a good customer if she was not disappointed, as she was fond of encouraging persons who were young in trade. On the following day, Mrs. Harvey called and paid for the ruffles, and, having given orders for some other articles, desired that they might be brought to her house in the Curtain Road near Holywell Mount in Shoreditch on the succeeding day. At the time appointed, Miss Woodcock went to the house, where Mrs. Harvey received her politely and desired her to drink tea. But as the days were short and as she had no friend to attend her, she expressed her wish to decline the invitation. Mrs. Harvey then states that a friend of hers requires Sarah's services and that she would be a lucrative customer for Sarah to have, and begs her to come with her. Sarah initially declines, but is strongly pressed, and she finally agrees. Lord Baltimore's carriage is waiting with windows covered up. Sarah and Mrs. Harvey go into the carriage, where they eventually arrive at a fashionable residence. Sarah does not know where she is. When she enters the house, she sees Dr. Griffenberg, who states that the lady of the house will be in shortly. As she waits, she is alarmed to see a man who has visited her shop frequently in the last few weeks. She doesn't know his name. It is, in fact, Lord Baltimore. From the Newgate Calendar, the 26th of March, 1768, Dr. Griffenberg had not been long absent when Lord Baltimore entered, and Miss Woodcock was much alarmed when she discovered that he was the very same person who had repeatedly been at her shop. But he desired her to be appeased, saying that he was a steward to the lady of whom she was come to attend. Miss Woodcock desired that she might immediately see the lady, on which Lord Baltimore said he would fetch her, and, soon afterwards bringing in Mrs. Griffenberg, said that she was the lady who had ordered the millinery goods. Orders were now given for tea, and when the equipage was taken from the table, Lord Baltimore brought from another room some purses, a ring, some smelling bottles, and some articles, which he said he had purchased for Miss Woodcock. She seemed to despise the trifle, which she intimated might have pleased her well enough when she was a child. As the evening advanced, she seemed importunate to depart, saying that her friends would become uneasy at her long absence, but at this time she had no idea of being forcibly detained. To divert her from the thoughts of departing, Lord Baltimore took her to view several apartments in the house. On their coming into one where there was a harpsichord, he proposed to play a tune on that instrument to the young lady, and when he had done so, and she became still more anxious to depart, he insisted that she should stay for supper, and gave a private intimation to Mrs. Griffenberg to make the necessary preparation. Mrs. Griffenberg being retired, Lord Baltimore took Miss Woodcock behind the window curtain and behaved to her in a manner very inconsistent with the rules of decency. On her making violent opposition to this insult, Dr. Griffenberg and Mrs. Harvey advanced, as if to assist his lordship, but she contested the matter with them all, and, forcing her way toward the door, declared that she would go home immediately, yet still it does not appear that she had any suspicion of sustaining the violence that was afterwards offered her. Sarah is now effectively imprisoned in a house and location that she does not know. She still believes Lord Baltimore is the steward of the lady's house, and he continues to press his advances upon her. From the Newgate Calendar, the 26th of March, 1768. After this, Lord Baltimore insisted on her sitting with him at supper, but her mind was too much discomposed to admit of her thinking of taking any refreshment. He offered her a glass of syllabub, but she beat it out of his hand and ran toward the door with an intention to have departed, but he told her it was late and that no coach was then to be procured, and at length he said positively that she should not go home. Dr. Griffenberg, with his wife and Mrs. Harvey, now endeavoured to prevail on the young lady to go to bed, but she declared that she would never sleep in that house. On this, they conducted her to a room in which they went to bed, but she continued walking about till the morning and lamenting her unhappy situation. Looking out of the window at about 8 o'clock, she observed a young woman passing, to whom she threw out her handkerchief, which was then heavy with tears. As the party did not see her, she called out, "Young woman!" on which the other made a motion as if she would fling the handkerchief within the rail. As Miss Woodcock called to the woman, with an intention of sending her to her father, the two women now jumped out of bed and forced her from the window, upbraiding her with what they called a rejection of her good fortune and wishing themselves in so happy a situation. Sarah has spent a night pacing the room, staying awake in case of attack. She declines to eat or drink in fear that it may be drugged. In the morning, she again asks to be released and allowed to go home. Her request is denied, with promises of release at noon. From the Newgate Calendar, the 26th of March, 1768, Lord Baltimore and Dr. Griffenberg came in soon afterwards, when the former said that he was astonished at her outrageous behaviour, as he had promised that she should go home at 12 o'clock. She replied that she would go home directly, as her sister, and in particularly her father, would be inexpressibly anxious on occasion of her absence. Lord Baltimore now conducted her downstairs and ordered breakfast, but she refused to eat and wept incessantly till 12 o'clock, when she was once more demanded her liberty. His lordship now said that he loved her to excess, that he could not part with her, and that he did not intend any injury to her, and that he would write to her father, and on this he wrote a letter, of which the following is a copy, and in it he sent a banknote of £200. "Your daughter sends you the enclosed and desires you will not be uneasy on her account, because everything will turn out well with a little patience and prudence. She is at a friend's house, safe and well, in all honesty and honour. Nothing else is meant. You may depend on it. And, sir, as your presence and consent are necessary, we beg of you to come in a private manner to Mr. Richard Smith's in Broad Street Building." Lord Baltimore showed this letter to Miss Woodcock, but so greatly was her mind disturbed that she knew little of its contents, and so exceedingly was she terrified that she wrote the following words at the bottom by his direction: "Dear Father, this is true, and I should be glad you would come this afternoon, from your dutiful daughter." After writing the above postscript, she appears to have been convinced of the impropriety of it, and turning to his lordship, she said, Can you look me in the face and say that your name is Richard Smith or that these are Broad Street buildings? Stuck with guilt, he acknowledged his name was not Richard Smith, but said that the gentleman lived within a few doors and that the place was not the Broad Street buildings in the city, but another of the same name at the west end of the town. She now wept incessantly at the thought of her unhappy situation, and repeatedly begged for her liberty, but no sooner did she presume to go toward the window to make her distress evident to any casual passenger than one or other of the women forced her away. Sarah is not released at noon, and evening approaches. She continues to beg to be released, continuously weeping. She again refuses refreshments in case her food or drink is drugged. Sarah spends another wakeful night pacing the room in fear of being attacked. In the morning, she again begs Lord Baltimore to release her. What follows are promises that her father has been contacted and given £200, and assurances that her father is happy to know that Sarah is safe. From the Newgate Calendar, the 26th of March, 1768. As night is drawing near again, and with her not having had any food or drink the 2 days she has been there, she is convinced to go to sleep for the night with the presence of Mrs. Harvey in the bed with her, and whilst Sarah leaves all her clothes on. In the morning, it is now day 3, and Lord Baltimore's patience with Sarah is beginning to wane. On the following morning, when Miss Woodcock went downstairs, she pleaded earnestly with Lord Baltimore for her liberty, on which he became most violently enraged, calling her by the vilest of names, and said that if she spoke to him on the subject any more, he would either throw her out of the window or send her home in a wheelbarrow with her petticoats tied over her head. And, turning to his servant, he said, "Take the slut to a mean house like herself," which greatly terrified her, as she presumed he meant a house of ill fame. The sufferings she had undergone having by this time made her extremely ill, Lord Baltimore mixed a physical draught for her, which he insisted on her taking and drinking. On the Sunday afternoon, he begged her to sit and hear him talk. His discourse consisted of a ridicule on religion and everything that was sacred, even to denying the existence of a soul. After supper, he made several attempts to ravish her within 2 hours, but she repulsed him in such a determined manner that it was impossible for him to accomplish his dishonourable purpose. On that night she lay with Mrs. Harvey, but could not get any rest, as she was in perpetual fear of renewed insults from his lordship. The following morning, fresh promises are made that she will be allowed to see her father if she dries her eyes and spruces up. Sarah, with Lord Baltimore, Mrs. Harvey, and the Griffenbergs, all go in a closed coach together. But Sarah is not to be released. Rather, she is now at Lord Baltimore's Epsom estate. From the Newgate Calendar, the 26th of March, 1768. They were carried to Lord Baltimore's country seat at Epsom, where she experienced fresh acts of indecency from her ignoble tormentor, and, on her again resisting him, he said she must submit that night, with or without her consent, and in this declaration he was supported by the 2 infamous women. At supper she ate a few mouthfuls, but declining drinking anything, lest some intoxicating matter should be mixed with the liquor. The 2 women now conducted her to the bedchamber and began to undress her, nor was she capable of making much resistance, being weak. through want of food and continued grief. Still, however, she begged to be deprived of life rather than to submit to dishonourable treatment. On the drawing of the curtains, she observed that Lord Baltimore was in bed, which added to her former terrors, but she was not sufficient to remain long in doubt. The women left her, but alas, not to her repose, for that night gave rise to the crime which furnished matter for the prosecution of which we are now reciting the particulars. Twice, according to Miss Woodcock's deposition, was this horrid purpose effected, and although she called out repeatedly for help, yet she found none. And in the morning, when she went to Mrs. Harvey's room and told her what had happened, the latter advised her to be quiet, for that she had made noise enough already. Sarah's imposed incarceration continues. She overhears Dr. Griffenberg say the name of Lord Baltimore, and for the first time she knows the name of her tormentor. Sarah is introduced to Lord Baltimore's daughter, who is told that Sarah will be a companion to them. She is then shown apartments among the servants' quarters and told that this will be her new abode. Meanwhile, Sarah's family have been trying to trace her. When they believe they have traced her whereabouts, they contact a solicitor. The solicitor, in turn, manages to trace Mrs. Harvey and have her arrested in regard to the disappearance of Sarah. Lord Baltimore, upon hearing this news, takes Sarah and the others back to the Griffenberg residence in hopes of avoiding the expected arrival of the police now that Mrs. Harvey has been arrested. They are at the residence only a short while when the police arrive. Lord Baltimore manages to escape back to his house, only to find the police there the following morning. Sarah is still his prisoner. From the Newgate Calendar, the 26th of March, 1768, Miss Woodcock was then told that her father had caused Mrs. Harvey to be taken into custody. Lord Baltimore now went to the Griffenbergs with Miss Woodcock, taking likewise a young lady of whom she was to declare herself the companion. But they had been only a few minutes at Griffenberg's when a servant came to apprise his lordship that Sir John Fielding's people had surrounded his house. In the morning, Mr. Watts, the attorney, called at Lord Baltimore's house with a writ of habeas corpus, but the porter would not admit him till he produced the writ. But then he was asked into the house, and Lord Baltimore made acquainted with his business. On this, his lordship told the prisoner Mr. Watts' business and begged she would prepare to see him with all possible composure. In the interim, his lordship waited on the attorney, who demanded whether one Sarah Woodcock was in his house, but on his declining to give an immediate answer, Watts said that he would serve the writ unless she was instantly produced, and that the consequence would be that all his doors must be broken open till she was found, but he hoped that so violent a procedure would not be necessary. Sarah is pressured by Lord Baltimore to write to her father and state that she had been treated tenderly and that she is staying with Lord Baltimore under consent. Not knowing what to do, unaware that there is help on the way, and still alarmed at what may happen to her, she consents and writes a letter stating the same to her father. However, Lord Mansfield is now involved and wishes to see Sarah for himself to confirm that she is indeed not being held against her wishes. She told her friends will be there too. Sarah goes to see Lord Mansfield, but does not realize that she is inches from freedom. From the Newgate Calendar, the 26th of March, 1768. The young lady being examined by Lord Mansfield, he inquired minutely into the circumstances respecting her being conveyed to Lord Baltimore's house. She answered every question in the most explicit manner, and when the judge asked her if she was willing to live with his lordship, she answered in the affirmative, but expressed great earnestness to see her friends first. On this, she was shown into the room where her friends waited, and the first question she asked was who Lord Mansfield was, and whether he had a right to set her at liberty. She was told that his right was indisputable, and his lordship being again consulted, he inquired if she still adhered to her former opinion, to which she replied that she did not, but desired to go home with her father. His lordship then asked her how happened the sudden change in her mind. Her answer was, because till I saw them, I did not know you had the power to release me. His lordship then said, child, it is in my power to let you go, and told her she was at full liberty to go where she pleased, on which she went into the other room to her friends, but was unable to express her joy on the occasion. Finally freed and tremendously traumatized, Sarah stays with friends. The case will go to court. The Griffenbergs are placed under arrest. Mrs. Harvey is already under arrest, and Lord Baltimore goes into hiding, but finally turns himself in, and the case goes to trial. From the Newgate Calendar, 26th of March, 1768. Bills of indictment being found against Lord Baltimore and the two women, they were all brought to trial before the Lord Chief Baron Smythe, and, after the evidence against them had been given in substance, as may be collected from the preceding narrative, Lord Baltimore made the defence. Unsurprisingly, Lord Baltimore has the finest defence money can buy. Sarah's two letters, in which she states she is okay, are brought forward. The £200 that Lord Baltimore had sent to her father is also brought forward. A narrative is painted of Lord Baltimore as a kind, generous man, in understanding the family financial difficulties of Sarah's family, happily helped by giving them £200. But that, having sent the money, Sarah was now making up stories in order to blackmail Lord Baltimore into giving her more money. As for the charges, he claims in sweeping terms his abhorrence of any kind of physical violence, that it was true that he was a libertine, but he would never harm any woman or purposefully cause any upset. The defence points out Sarah's relative youthful strength compared to his own physical feebleness. Lord Baltimore is believed, and he walks free. From the Newgate Calendar, the 26th of March, 1768. The substance of the defences of Mrs. Griffenberg and Mrs. Harvey consisted principally in alleging that Miss Woodcock had consented to all that had passed, and that no force had been used towards her either by Lord Baltimore or themselves. Gentlemen of the jury, the prisoner at the bar, Lord Baltimore, stands indicted for feloniously ravishing and carnally knowing Sarah Woodcock, spinster, against her will, on the 22nd of December last, at Epsom, against the statute which makes this offence felony, and the other two prisoners are indicted as accessories before the fact, by feloniously and maliciously procuring, aiding and abetting Lord Baltimore to commit the said rape at the same time and place. To this they have pleaded not guilty, and you are to try if they are guilty. After an absence of an hour and 20 minutes, the jury returned with a verdict that the prisoners were not guilty. This singular affair was tried at Kingston in Surrey on the 20th of March, 1768. Sadly, there is no justice for Sarah Woodcock. That concludes this episode of Frightful Fridays, The Dark Side of Royalty in the 1700s. We very much hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy this show, we would be grateful if you could like or subscribe to our channel. We upload 5 days a week. Mondays are murderous as we delve into the dark side of Regency and Victorian crime. Wednesdays are wicked, where we pull together stories with a similar theme, such as Doctors of Death. Fridays are frightful, where we look at crimes in a location, such as stories from the stage to murder and scandal in the aristocracy. Saturdays is Serial Killer Saturdays, where we investigate serial killer stories from the past. On the last Sunday of the month, we offer a 2-hour compilation of stories based around a theme. If you like this channel, you may be interested in our sister channel, Chronicle of the Times, where we offer a lighter side of Victorian and Edwardian news stories, as well as a weekly podcast of stories from authors of the day, such as Dickens, Collins, Benson, and Conan Doyle. Thank you again for watching and listening. This has been News of the Times, and I am Robin Coles.